Welcome to the Quick Stop Entertainment QuickCast series featuring filmmaker Terry Gilliam. Part 5.
I mean, how do you feel about, you know, as a filmmaker, you know, working with actors again? And because some filmmakers really love that, you know, I'm gathering my troupe of actors together. I mean, there's been repetitions.
I do like that, and I also like meeting new guys as well.
Because obviously Jeff came back for Tideland.
I mean, Jeff, I would, if I could, I just wish Jeff was as big a star as he should be.
I mean, did Amy tell you about the Jeff Bridges hair theory of quality?
No.
One of these things floating around the internet is that the great Jeff Bridges films are films in which his hair is long. So you look at
Fisher King, we get the great the Big Lebowski, we get
Tideland.
Yep.
And you look at movies where his hair is short, like, you know, Arlington Road or films like that, not so much. But the great Jeff Bridges are long hair films.
This is good. Did he do Buffalo Bill? He must have done some westerns with long hair as well.
I believe so, yeah. So,
Actually,
you might want to pass it along that there's this theory going around.
Jeff is such an exquisite actor. I just find him breathtaking, and it's tell Hollywood that they've basically, I think, written Jeff off because Jeff didn't play the game. He could have been, I suppose, they're all saying he could have been one of the great stars, but he chose to choose interesting films and not just do what Hollywood wanted him to do. And in a strange way, you feel that they punish their actors if they don't, you know, play it properly.
Well, they punish anyone who doesn't play it properly.
Yeah, I know, that's the truth. But it's, I just found, I mean, when after Fisher King and after Baker Boys, I won't name names, but it was one of the studios, and when it was actually for 12 Monkeys. And actually, before that, it was Defective Detective, and they actually said Jeff's a curse to movies. And I said, what are you talking about? And I think one of the reasons he got it is he was involved in the first Barbra Streisand film that didn't work, The Mirror is Two Faces. And does Barbra Streisand get the blame? No. Does Richard LeGravenaise, who wrote the script, get the blame? No. Jeff got the blame.
For cutting his hair.
Probably that was it. Because, you know, it was interesting. Prince of Tides. Barbra wanted Jeff to be the character that Nick Nolte played. And Jeff went off and did Fisher King instead. And then she finally got him for The Mirror's Two Faces. But what was interesting, Nick Nolte did Prince of Tides. The film was a big success. Nick then rode incredibly high, and his price was going up and up and up. And then he got involved in a Julia Roberts film. I can't remember what it's called, but it tanked. And he got the blame for it. They look after their female stars. There's so few of them when they have one. You know, Nick got the blame for that, and his high-flying career went plummeting. And then Jeff got the blame for the Barbra Streisand film that didn't work.
And then he grew his hair, but unfortunately it was just in time for a mugshot. I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, so you sit there and you think, oh, no. But I mean, what's great is Nick Nolte, Jeff, these are guys who do know what they want to do, and they chart their own course, and they're fantastic actors.
Well, I mean, I have to ask this because it's sort of a recurring theme, and, you know, I don't want to read things into the films.
Like doll's head?
Well, how could I not? You see publicity photos and you walk around with a doll's head, you gotta ask. But, you know, when I look at your films, particularly Tideland, it kind of brought this, you know, to a head, pun intended, is I would love to know your thoughts on the role of parents within your films.
Parents?
The role of parents. Not adults, per se.
Oh, parents.
But
like
parents.
Time Bandits?
In Time Bandits, in Brazil, look at the mother character in Brazil, and the father character in Baron Munchausen.
Fascinating, isn't it?
It seems like the parents don't really have, A, time for their children, or B, self-absorbed, sometimes to the point of negligence, and sometimes to the point of...
I think what you put your finger on is not my attitude towards my own parents, but the truth about me as a parent.
So we really have to talk to your kids.
I think it's more that. You should talk to Amy. No, because my parents were fantastic. This is what, I mean, it's, I blame them for not letting me be born and raised black, blind, and crippled, yeah, and poor. That was their failing as parents. And I look like I failed my children as well. So I thought, what kind of chance do you have as an artist if you haven't been, you know, had this terrible childhood? And so it's a very weird one, that one, because, you know, I don't think a bad thought about my parents, and yet in films the parents have gotten a pretty rough deal. And I think my wife would say I'm a pretty rotten parent. She's had to be a single parent family most of her life with the kids. And maybe it's my own guilt that's coming to fore here.
So, I mean, but it really is, and, you know, I having talked to Amy, I don't think you're a particularly bad parent. And having seen that South Bank show clip with you playing in the garden,
I don't think I am either. I think maybe, you know.
But it's interesting. It's just when you talk about that sort of, you know, that you know, childhood, you know, a poor black, yeah, you know, blind, you know, adversity kind of thing. It seems like, I mean, do you use that then, do you think, as a motivating factor within the films to kind of elevate the children to become the central characters?
It may be that. It just may be that, you know, I've been a victim of Grimm's fairy tales since I was a kid, and the parents invariably, you know, sort of dump their children in the forest. Maybe those are the things that they've always stuck with me, Hansel and Gretel, the idea that parents, you know, sort of encourage their children to go away. It's always been there. But that's what I think is strange, because I can't claim it's a result of my own life or my own childhood or my own experience. It's on this other level, and it's partly, maybe in all cases, it's about the child being allowed to blossom and be whatever he or she is capable of without the weight of his parents on his shoulders. I think that's what it's about. Because in Thailand, I mean, those are almost fairy tale parents. I mean, Jennifer we treat as a caricature. Jeff is more sympathetic, but that's certainly about the parents, about the child going away. In Time Bandits, it was always a film about a child escaping from a terrible background. But my background, I must admit, I did want to escape from it, and it was possibly I wanted to escape from it because it was too nurturing, too good, too nice. And I was desperate to be an artist, and I had to live badly and suffer. Otherwise, I would never be a real artist. I think it's a weird side of me that actually thinks like that.
I hate to say this, but it's almost in some way like you seek out, not confrontation, but just difficulty.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you probably put your finger right on the thing, because, I mean, when I, you know, left after college, I went off to New York and just, you know, lived with no money, but I was, like, free, but it seemed to be important to suffer. This is weird. I think, but it's sort of a Christian artist is what it has to be. It's the Christian side of thing, which involves a lot of suffering always.
Well, I mean, it's that Midwestern ethos.
Yeah. But I thought Christ was supposed to suffer for it, so we didn't have to. But no, I think that's why that was always the joke, that my father was a carpenter and my mother was a virgin. And I had always this weird Christ-like complex.
Well, that's why you kept painting
about adversity that sort of, it's, you know, why do people climb mountains? Not because it's easy. A mountain is a difficult thing, and yet that's what people want to do. And so it seems like anybody who gets good at anything takes on something that's very difficult, that's going to be painful, that's going to be beyond what they think their capabilities might be, just so they can find out how far they can go. And I think that's probably what filmmaking is. It's, you know, it's my version of a mountain. And the business of fighting is interesting because, you know, like in Thailand, there was no fight. That's what was interesting. I don't really look for fights, but But when people come up with really dumb ideas and try to say, no, you've got to do this or that to succeed, that gets me angry if it violates what the heart of the essence of whatever story we're telling. It makes me crazy, and I will then go to war.
Well, you're Bugs Bunny that way.
Huh?
You're Bugs Bunny that way.
Yeah. And I need Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, finally, when you're pushed to the edge, of course you realize this means war.
Yeah.
using the classic Groucher line, of course. So, but I mean, that's exactly how you describe the interaction with the Weinsteins on Grimm, was that, you know, there's a certain point at which, well, yes, now there's war.
But the difference with the Weinsteins, as opposed to any other, you know, experiences I've had with producers or studios, all, is that they took the joy of filmmaking away, and I don't think that the war was in any way beneficial to the film. Where sometimes the war is good because it gets the adrenaline going and some really great ideas come up.
Such as at Munchausen, you would say?
A different experience, and that's what kind of threw me. I mean, I found out from somebody who had talked to Marty Scorsese after King of Comedy that he said exactly the same thing I said about my experience with them, is they took the joy of filmmaking away. And that's what was painful and difficult. It's a strange thing, and something they will probably never, ever, ever understand, because they are filmmakers and they love films. But I think that's what bothered me. I mean, my fight with Phil was, you know, the film was made. We had it. I was proud of it, and I knew what I was fighting for. Munchausen, we didn't have fight. We had, you know, difficulties, i.e. all the money running out, things like that. But that was not so much a fight as a difficulty to surmount. And the other films, you know, again, there have always been differences of opinion, but not bad. I mean, Fisher King was a breeze, 12 Monkeys was a breeze, Fear and Loathing was a breeze. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, the whole story of me and my battles, I think, again, is slightly lazy journalism. It's an easy story to do. It's when you stop beating your wife. And I get caught answering it, and I realize that it's actually pretty minor in the big picture of what I've done and how I've had to do things. It's just enough to make a good story.
Well, you're just a battle-prone financial black hole.
Just a troublemaker.
Yes.
I think also it comes down to, I can't stand authority, especially my own.
Yes, you seem to undercut it at every turn.
Well, I do on films. I keep telling the crew that, you know, it's maybe you've got to fire the director. Maybe the director's the problem in this one. Because I want to continually break authority hierarchy down, because I think it gets in the way of doing good work. And there's the most terrifying feeling is when I hear what I said 2 weeks ago coming back to me from somebody else, as if it's their opinion now. And I really get scared when I hear that, because I want people to keep thinking their own thoughts. And then we can have conversations and arguments based on what people really think, not what they think I want to hear.
But do you think that at the end of the day, that's possible on a film set? I mean, do you ultimately have to have the director who will put their foot down and say, no, this is how we're going to do it?
No, that does happen. That's what I do at the end of it. But before that moment comes, I want to hear from as many people as possible what they really think. And yes, ultimately, I will make the final decision, but I don't want it to, well, sometimes it occasionally, I mean, it does come down to me saying that, oh, come on, just shut up, everybody. This is what we're doing today.
Please check back next week for the next part of our QuickCast interview with Terry Gilliam. www.quickstopentertainment.com